Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Sue Elliott is the Tanglewood Learning Institute Director, and she joins us now to fill us in on some of the Tanglewood Learning Institute's online programming that we can partake in for the rest of the summer. Sue Elliott, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you, Sarah. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we speak specifically about what people can view, let's talk about creating the season after having already created a season, what you were able to salvage, if anything, and how generating content in light of a global pandemic and a huge surge of racial inequality has been, and if you've had to look and absorb those things into your programming.
Sure. So as you mentioned, we started selling Tanglewood Learning Institute and Tanglewood concerts back in November, which is typical for us at the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And so when we made the decision in the early spring and then announced in mid-May that we were making necessary changes to the summer festival, we'd been hard at work thinking generally and then more specifically for a little while. I would say that for the Tanglewood Learning Institute, the majority of our programs were fairly easy to adjust to a no longer in-person format. Mm-hmm. We did make some big choices about what to present, if only as a matter of resources on behalf of the organization, because one of the interesting things that answers a little bit of the second question you asked is that in some ways everybody's jobs changed a little bit, because when we invite performers to Tanglewood, or I invite speakers or other folks who are featured in Tanglewood Learning Institute programming, they pretty much bring their program with them. You know, our soloists know the concerto already, and our speakers have a slideshow ready to go. And of course, when we get into producing pre-recorded filmed segments, it increases the amount of time that all of our staff are actually working in the post-production process to create what is then viewable on our streaming platform. So that's one big shift. I think the other thing that we needed to do, and rather quickly in the context of this kind of work in non-pandemic times, was to actually stand up a brand new streaming platform for the BSO. You know, we made the choice that we wanted to create a platform that did involve viewers logging in to watch our programming. And I have worked in the online environment previously to my role here at the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And in those contexts, you would stand up a platform. You'd have a year or two to prepare all of those things. And at the BSO, from the moment we decided which platform to select to the first program that aired on July 1st, we had 31 days. So everything went into hyperdrive, as it did for so many other organizations, you know, just to try and find a way to stay connected to those people who've supported the organization for a long time, and where possible, connect with new audiences. You know, one of the advantages of doing an online summer for Tanglewood, and this would be a silver lining that we're sad in some ways, you know, we didn't have audiences here, but a silver lining is that then we could be in the homes of people all around the world right here from the Berkshires, and it you know, takes away the need to travel to come to see what's going on at Tanglewood. So that was one of the little silver linings, but certainly we're thrilled with what we've been able to present. And our primary goal with the online festival this summer was to give people a taste of Tanglewood and of the programming that they, if they'd been here before, would have been accustomed to seeing and experiencing on campus.
What were the primary reasons, quickly, for standing up your own video platform rather than uploading to something that already exists?
Well, I think in part it's because we wanted to charge some money for Right. some of our programs. And there are all different kinds of ways to do that. But any organization or business that we're engaging with these days, whether they're a for-profit or a nonprofit like we are, it's important to create a very seamless experience for those loyal customers. So Amazon.com does it on their website, and we like to do the same kind of thing, if you will, for those folks who are accustomed to buying things with us. So that was one of the overarching desires. I think also we were really concerned about the quality of the video and audio streams that we were providing. And so we invested in a couple of different platforms that we integrated that work together. So all of our video and audio programs are running on a platform called Bright Cove, which is actually a Boston-based company. And they have, we think, one of the industry best standard platforms in terms of latency and quality of video and audio streams. And then we integrated some other software with that. For many of the Tanglewood Learning Institute programs, we're featuring speakers from all around the country. And so we have a different software that feeds that their camera-enabled device in their office or studio into our control room at Symphony Hall, and then that gets populated on the Bright Cove platform. There are many organizations that are using Zoom, and we do use that for some of our events, for donors and other things, but the quality of the video and audio transmission in Zoom would have really compromised any of our musical programming to such a degree that we thought it wasn't worth it, in fact, to broadcast that way. We do have things that are free of charge that still require that login, and you still get that high quality of viewing experience. And we have been putting things out just on our own website without any login required as well. So we've sort of got this big mix going on, and I would say that one of our goals, too, for the entire organization was just to learn a whole lot about this new way of working and engaging with people this summer. And so, as we think about what the future might entail over the next year, we're still working on those plans, and there's nothing really to announce beyond the press release that we put out last week. Mm-hmm. But all of the things that we continue to learn every day with the current setup we're using may, in fact, inform what we do in the future.
How important is it when you're building a season of events to cover the spectrum in terms of representation and diversity, be it, you know, gender, sexuality, or race, as you put together your programs? Do you consider that?
So for the Tanglewood Learning Institute, one of our stated goals in our work is to amplify voices of the underrepresented and the silenced, and that takes many different forms. So I would say that we are very interested in not only hearing from people with a variety of perspectives, but provoking our viewers and our listeners to add their perspectives and to think along different lines. So that is absolutely a part of the planning process, not with any particularly pre-assigned targets in terms of numbers or percentages or anything like that, mm-hmm. but to make sure that across all of the different elements of programming that we are offering a variety of perspectives. And so that means many things in the world of classical music. It means not only focusing on music that's at least 150 years old, it means talking about music of today as well. It means featuring speakers who have been working in their chosen area for 5 decades and also featuring speakers who are newer to their fields. And it absolutely includes artists and speakers who identify as people of color, who identify as LGBTQ+, and or gender non-binary. And so, it's important to us for sure as one of the many things that we look at when we're putting together all of the programs.
So very much to keep in mind. Do you want to, in our last few minutes, give me kind of a speed round run through of what you have coming up, some of the programs you'd like to particularly mention today?
Sure thing. So we have 3 collections that live on our portal through August 30th that might be really interesting for viewers, regardless of how deep their affinity goes into what you might term classical, capital C music. Mm-hmm. So one of the collections that is partway through its premiere broadcasts is all about the Roaring Twenties. So it's looking at the influence of arts and the artists of the 1920s through the lens of 100 years of history. And so we have talks there about contemporary and popular music and composers and their influence on each other in the 1920s. One of the United States' first contributions to global, to a sort of global awareness or like a kind of art coming out of the United States, and that's actually blackface in musical theater and vaudeville. And then also the influence of jazz and social dance in film and music and those artists. And there are some very, very interesting parallels in that particular talk to today in terms of essential workers and in terms of racism and anti-racist movements. So that's our Roaring Twenties Open Forum collection. We now have the full collection Open Forum for the Romantic Spirit, which focuses on visual arts, literature, and music of the 19th century, which, let's be honest, forms the bulk of any Boston Symphony Orchestra season. But finding ways to integrate interesting topics from the other arts that impact music and vice versa, it's a really thoughtful, interesting collection presented by three scholars who are women from universities around the country. And then finally, for those of our viewing audience, existing or new, who love Ludwig von Beethoven, it's his 250th birthday year this year. And so we have a collection of five different resources that stay up through the end of August. And what I love about all of the sessions in this collection is that it really shows musical detective work at its finest. You know, it's easy to imagine that Beethoven, who was born 250 years ago, that we've already learned everything we need to know about him. But not so, in fact. And so we have a really interesting exploration of one of Beethoven's pianos, the actual instrument that he composed on near the end of his life when he suffered from profound hearing loss, and alterations that were made to that piano to help him compose more effectively. And we have musical detective work from the House of Lobkowitz, which is actually historically one of the royal families of the Czech Republic. And they have an immense collection of musical items in an archive there, more than 6,000 pieces. And the seventh Prince Lobkowitz was a patron of Beethoven, so provided a lot of financial support and other for Beethoven when, for example, his third symphony, the Eroica, was being premiered. And so musical detective work, not in the way you might think, but in looking at some of the receipts that were issued for payments to musicians and payments for musical instruments and how many chairs were in those rooms. And it might seem really small when I'm talking about it in that respect, but when you think about it in the context of what it was like to actually put these works together when they were first composed, it's really, really fascinating.
To learn about all of these events and more, you can visit the Tanglewood Learning Institute website, tli.org. Sue Elliott is the director of the Tanglewood Learning Institute. One more time, that URL is tli.org, and it will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. Sue, thank you very much for your time and for everything that you're doing over there.
You're welcome, and we'll see you all online.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.